Witnesses expressed concern about a key call between President Trump and Ukraine.
There's this definite disagreement or disconnect between the way the two reacted to the call, or at least the way they expressed that reaction to the call.
We'll have more on testimony from today's impeachment hearings. Plus, how U.S. consumers are showing the nation's partisan divide. It's Tuesday, November 19th. This is the PM edition of What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. The Taliban has released two Western hostages in exchange for three high-profile militant fighters belonging to the terrorist group's most feared faction, the Haqqani Network. The Taliban released American Kevin King and Australian Timothy Weeks after more than 3 years in captivity. The prisoner exchange is seen as an important step that could restart negotiations to end the 18-year Afghan war. Two federal correctional officers have been charged with conspiracy and records falsification, stemming from the August death of financier Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein's death in a Manhattan jail was ruled a suicide by the city medical examiner. He was being held there on charges that he orchestrated a sex trafficking ring for years. Today's indictment of the jail's guards reveals security lapses at the Metropolitan Correctional Center. Prosecutors alleged that the guards spent much of their shifts browsing the internet, sleeping, and moving around the unit's common area. They also failed to conduct mandated prisoner checks, despite signing multiple records saying they had done so. Boeing has received a major order for its grounded 737 MAX jets. The plane maker said Tuesday that it had agreed to deliver 30 737 MAXs to Kazakhstan's Air Astana. The deal is valued at $3.6 billion at list price. The order is significant because the Kazakh carrier had previously bought jets from Boeing's rival Airbus. U.S. retailers are sending mixed signals on consumer spending. The latest earnings from Kohl's and Home Depot show weakening demand, while discounter TJX, the parent company of TJ Maxx and Home Goods, showed strong sales. Last week, Walmart, the nation's biggest retailer, extended its growth streak, marking a five-year run of quarterly sales gains. We'll hear from more retailers this week, including Target, which reports earnings on Wednesday morning. The latest witnesses to testify publicly in the impeachment probe expressed concerns about a July call between President Trump and his Ukrainian counterpart. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman is the National Security Council's Ukraine expert, and he listened in to that call. Vindman told lawmakers today that he had concerns about the call and that it was his duty to report it to White House counsel.
It was improper for the president to request and to demand an investigation into a political opponent, especially a foreign power where there's at best dubious belief that this would be a completely impartial investigation, and that this would have significant implications if it became public knowledge and it would be perceived as a partisan play. It would undermine our Ukraine policy and it would undermine our national security.
Tim Hanrahan is our Washington News Desk Chief, and he joins me now. Tim, we heard several hours of testimony from Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and from Jennifer Williams, an advisor to Vice President Mike Pence. What exchanges or testimony stood out to you today?
Well, I think the first part was what we sort of expected, which was that Vindman would come out and say that he heard this call on July 25th. He thought it was improper. It raised a lot of warning bells for him, and he referred those to a lawyer in the National Security Council. Williams was also interesting because she was also concerned about the call. She thought it was unusual. However, Vindman said that he heard Trump demand these things from the Ukrainian president. Williams said she wasn't prepared to say that and that people should really go back to the transcript and read it. She just said it was unusual, but she didn't call it a demand as Vindman had. So there's this definite disagreement or disconnect between the way the two reacted to the call, or at least the way they expressed that reaction to the call.
So, Tim, there was also an interesting line of questioning we pointed out as part of our live coverage. And this was when Republicans were trying to call Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's judgment into question. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So it was a really interesting moment in the hearing when Colonel Vindman was asked about a job offer he got from a Ukrainian official. Basically, the official said, we'd like you to be the defense minister for Ukraine. This was the first time we'd heard about this, and obviously Vindman then had to explain how he handled this. He said he immediately rejected the offer, rejected it several times, and also reported it to his superiors and never took it seriously. The reason this is important is because Republicans have tried to question his credibility, and this was a new way they could question whether he was truly loyal to U.S. interests or if, in fact, he had a soft spot for Ukraine. Vindman was born in Ukraine, and this has been an area where Democrats have accused Republicans of accusing him of dual loyalties. Republicans reject that, but it was an interesting moment and an interesting piece of information we learned this morning.
And we also know President Trump has been watching the public hearings and weighing in on Twitter and elsewhere. What have we heard from him today so far?
So President Trump got in some hot water when the former ambassador to Ukraine testified, Yovanovitch, for tweeting about her during the testimony, and Democrats said that, you know, could be witness intimidation. Today, Trump laid fairly low, but he then hosted a meeting at the White House, and he made some comments about the hearing. He said he thought Republicans were, quote, killing it, unquote. You know, they were doing a very good job in their questioning of the witnesses. He also said he didn't know Vindman. You know, I've never heard of these people, which is true. Colonel Vindman, during his testimony, said again that he had never personally met President Trump. He advised him, you know, through written notes and memos and talking points, but he had never personally met the president or advised him on policy.
Tim, we've talked about the picture witnesses who have testified publicly have been painting of what happened. What can you tell us about now? We've heard from several witnesses, including last week's. By the end of this week, we'll have heard from 8 more in total. Are we seeing a pattern among these stories as to what happened here?
For the most part, we're getting similar retellings of key meetings. The pivotal differences between some of the recollections involve figures like European Union Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who was here at many of these key moments and also was helping to drive what he said was President Trump's effort to get these investigations started in Ukraine. Sondland has amended his testimony in the past, and he'll be coming up later this week to give his testimony. And his testimony will be under a microscope because he was at many of these pivotal events, and he can hopefully answer some questions about whether there was this implicit quid pro quo or not, whether this amounted to some sort of bribery, as the Democrats allege, or not, and also what President Trump told him. I mean, Republicans argue, look, a lot of these stories are second and third hand. A lot of this testimony is second and third hand. And finally, we'll get Gordon Sondland in the room, who should be able to shed some light on what President Trump actually wanted and what President Trump directed him and other officials to do.
And we'll have more on Sondland's testimony tomorrow. That's the Wall Street Journal's Tim Hanrahan joining me from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you.
And as we're recording, 2 more witnesses are currently testifying, former National Security Council official Tim Morrison and former Special Envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker. They are the first witnesses to be invited by Republicans to testify publicly. We have more live analysis up on our website, WSJ.com. Are your jeans blue or are they actually red? We're not talking about the color of your pants. In a time of deep political divisions and ahead of the 2020 election, more brands are becoming associated with either Republicans or Democrats. And it's not just clothing. Our Suzanne Kapner spoke with U.S. consumers about how their shopping reflects their politics. And she joins me now. So, Suzanne, you looked at brands that have become more closely associated with Republicans or Democrats. And 2 jeans companies, Levi's and Wrangler, provided a good lens here. Tell us more about what you discovered about these particular brands and the people who are most likely to wear each of them.
Well, Levi Strauss in recent years has really come out in favor of some progressive movements such as gun control, support for immigrants, and that has shifted its consumer base to the left, according to the consumer research we looked at. Wrangler, on the flip side, hasn't really waded into political or social issues at all, but it has stayed very true to its roots of the cowboy rodeo culture. It does a lot of advertising with rodeo associations. And, you know, if you see even its national TV ads, they compare bull riding to riding a motorcycle, and it's very sort of tied into that whole cowboy culture. And those regions of the country have become more red in recent years.
This isn't a trend we're seeing just across gene companies. And you explain in your piece that there's no easy answer to why it's happening, but you did touch on some of those reasons. Obviously, it makes sense that companies that take an explicit stance. What about the geographic component, just where a particular group of people tend to live?
Well, we have become more polarized geographically. Red states are getting redder. Blue states are getting bluer. You know, it's the rural counties of America that are becoming more red, and the urban centers are becoming more blue, and that is definitely playing a role. And, you know, also, you know, we looked at some research from the Pew Center that showed, you know, there are fewer Democrats who hold conservative views and fewer Republicans who hold liberal views. So just the electorate is just becoming more polarized in general.
Are companies under more pressure from consumers to take a political side on major issues?
Absolutely. You know, a decade ago, these issues would have been considered a third rail for these companies. But today, they really have to take a stand on something to appeal particularly to younger, more socially conscious consumers. Research from Edelman, this public relations firm, shows that today nearly 60% of people will, you know, they'll either buy something, not buy it, you know, make some part of their buying decision based on a brand's stance on these issues. That's up from 47% just a few years ago.
Wow. And you spoke to some consumers about their choices. What did you hear from them?
You know, I talked to one shopper who, you know, she is concerned about the environment, so she has stopped shopping at fast fashion retailers. She was buying much more secondhand goods. When she got engaged, she told her husband she did not want a blood diamond, and he bought her a lab-grown diamond instead. She doesn't wear makeup that's tested on animals. I talked to another consumer who, he was a lifelong Wrangler consumer. That's all he wore, you know, Wrangler all the time. He just bought his first pair of Levi jeans this year because he was so impressed with what the company was doing on gun control that he feels like any company trying to make this country a better place deserves his money.
These are choices that can have a real impact in terms of dollars.
They can, but, you know, keep in mind, too, that consumers can sometimes say one thing in a survey and they don't necessarily follow through with their buying decisions. And there are other shoppers I talk to who they just want brands to steer clear of these cultural and social issues altogether. There's a woman who she stopped shopping at a bunch of designer brands after they all came out in support of Planned Parenthood. Now, she's an advocate of abortion rights. It's not that. It's that she said she doesn't want to wear her politics.
So overall, what can you tell us about what consumers shopping the political divide can tell us overall about the nation's polarization when it comes to politics?
I mean, we are just becoming a much more polarized country. You know, obviously, we've seen that in the political sphere, and now we're seeing it in, you know, automobiles and restaurants and clothing and, you know, alcohol. It's manifesting in all, you know, different ways that things that consumers buy and consume.
Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner joining me here in our studio in New York. Thank you so much, Suzanne.
Thank you.
We'd like to hear from you. Have you chosen or avoided a brand because of a company's political positions? Let us know by tweeting us at WSJ Podcasts. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.